When clients are overcome by anxiety, their body mobilizes in a heightened state of fear and defense. In this state, it can be nearly impossible for a client to talk through the anxiety. The key, according to Dr. Stephen Porges, is to regulate the body first. Here he shares one way to calm the body and reduce anxiety.
Before it was co-opted by psychiatry and the clinical disciplines, resided in the body. So people used to think of anxiety and they would feel it in their body. And then it became something that did not necessarily need a bodily response. But if we go back and we think about it as a body response, what we really start understanding is that our body is mobilizing. It's mobilizing in a state of fear and defense. And then we put on top of it our personal narrative, and that personal narrative can have many attributes. It may be an attribute that I'm fearful to do something, I don't want to do something, or I need something. It can get manifested in different ways. So if we take as our first assumption that anxiety is really our higher brain structures interpreting a bodily, a lower brain reaction gets manifested in our body as a defense, then we start asking questions about how can we rehabilitate, how can we manipulate, how can we perform what I like to call as neural exercises, how can we change that physiological state so that we can have a more, let's say, positive, more controlled, more regulated, and more appropriate set of behaviors. So that being said, I think the primary and the simplest mechanism is actually the manipulation of breath. And I'll flip it to the clinician. And when a clinician sees a person who's anxious, what are they seeing? They're seeing a person who's breathing in the upper part of their chest. They're seeing the body tense up. They're seeing the upper part of the face become flatter without exuberance. And they hear in the voice a much narrower set of frequencies. So it's a more monotonic, higher pitch vocalizations. We have all seen this. But if we now look at that person's chest and you see the tension in their hands as they get anxious, they are moving their breath higher and higher. They're actually creating a physiological state that supports the state of anxiety. And so they're not processing what you're saying, so you can't say, hey, look, just relax. What do you have to be anxious about? That doesn't work. That's like saying to someone, why are you depressed? You have everything to live for. If those things worked, there'd be no mental health would be just taken care of with a few words. But what we can see in the anxious person is their actual physiological reaction to this construct or embodying this construct of anxiety.
Now, Stephen made an important point that I don't want you to miss. We know the physical signs of anxiety. We've seen them time and again. But what Stephen just pointed out is that these physical signs are not just the result of anxious feelings. They can actually create and sustain anxiety too. So how might we help our clients reverse that? Well, here's how Stephen does it.
So what I do is basically try to have the person exhale slowly. Now, there are a lot of ways of doing this, and I will talk about that, and I will embed it into a little story. Several years ago, I was giving a talk at a large conference. There'd be around 800 or 900 people at this conference. And the night before the meeting, my host came up to me and said, Steve, I am deadly, very, very anxious about introducing you tomorrow. And I said, what are you anxious about? What bothers you? He said, they'll be talking in front of all those people. I said, don't worry about it. I'll fix it. And that was a couple of drinks. And then the next morning, at 10 minutes to 9, she walks up to me and she says, Steve, fix it. I looked at her and she was breathing way up there. And her breaths were getting shorter and shorter, and the muscle tension was there, and her voice had no intonation. So I said to her, this is going to sound a little strange. I said, extend the duration of your phrases. Just add a word before you take a breath. Because she was basically taking a breath on every other word. And you can hear that and see that in many people who express anxiety. At first, it was extraordinarily difficult. She couldn't get that word in. And then the word got in. And then another word got in. And then more words. So she was extending the duration of her exhalation through a trick. I was telling her to say more words before in her phrases. And as she extended the duration of exhalation, she changed physiological state. She changed it because during exhalation, the myelinated vagus, the vagus that calms us, can do its job. It affects the pacemaker of the heart, and it's much more potent during exhalation. So if you can extend durations of exhalation, you can calm down. So after that, she started to calm down. She went up and gave her talk, and she did a beautiful introduction. And now she does use this treatment for treating people who have speaking anxieties.
This story illustrates an important point. The body has the capability to override anxious thoughts. You see, when the myelinated vagus can do its job, our bodies will calm. And as Stephen just said, a small trick, something even as small as adding a word to a phrase, for instance, that can extend the exhalation and calm the body. Okay, so now let's go back to Stephen for another story. In this one, he'll show us the powerful influence that breathing can have on our feelings.
In my workshops, I do a little exercise. I have people couple off. I get dyads too, and I have one person doing different breathing and the other person observing. Then I reverse roles where they observe and then do breathing. But what do I have? How do I have them breathe? I have them breathe by first extending the duration of their inhalations and reducing the duration of their exhalations. So based upon what I said previously, that should make them change their physiology, remove the vagal inhibition, and make them more, quote, anxious. And then I have them reverse the breathing. I have the observer watching to see what happens in the other person. Then I reverse the roles of the two people. This is what happens when the person is doing the longer inhalations, and that is taking off the vagal brake, getting the body more activated. Longer inhalation, shorter exhalations. The person doing the breathing looks at the other person and says, "Did I do something wrong?" They see the other person as being very evaluative. So they start seeing features that are reflected in the other person's face and even in their perspective of the other person, that they haven't done something right. Did they do the breathing wrong? What's wrong? Am I not a nice person or something like that? They reverse the breathing role and they get a totally different experience. They say, "Oh, what an attractive person. I'd like to know that person better." So they start switching in terms of their interpretation of other as they do their breathing. Then if you get the observer to talk to you, they start saying, well, the face hardened up, they start looking, distorted, and then when they start breathing with longer exhalation, there's a softening and an attractiveness. So in those types of very simple manipulations of physiological state by a voluntary breathing pattern, we can see that we could have a resource that could help us manage anxiety.
As Stephen points out, breathing patterns can be powerful. They can either calm anxiety or they can heighten it. Now, what about when it comes to a specific type of anxiety, like a panic attack? Here, Dr. Peter Levine gets into how to harness the physiology of a panic attack, and this can help a client to lessen its power.
Generally, panic anxiety has to do with specific bodily sensations, often increased heartbeat, strength of heart, pounding of the heart. It may include pressure on the chest, difficulty in breathing. It may be twisting in the gut. So the key here, and this sometimes you can get people who have had severe panic attacks, and in a really short period of time, you can help them not have the panic attacks, because when they can feel the physical sensations and then they learn that the physical sensations can and will change, and that what's happening is their mind is getting in and, saying, so if the person even just is walking up a flight of stairs and their heart is pounding, and then maybe they're saying, oh my God, I'm having a panic attack, another panic attack. And that can very easily trigger the panic attack. So it's being able to localize, locate the sensations, whether it's heartbeat, chest pressure, throat constriction, churning or twisting in the gut, as long as they can isolate the sensations, be able to focus in a soft way on the sensations, allow them to change, then the panic anxiety loses its grip. So that's really the way to work, I think. And of course, there are other aspects of it, but you need to work, I believe, with it first physiologically. Of course, very often panic is associated with abandonment, terror. But simple panic is more simple than that. But again, as long as you can first do something that gives them a tool to not be trapped by the panic, then you can look at some of the other aspects of the fear and the anxiety. But you have to be able to work first with the panic physiology. And of course, very often there's hyperventilation. So the person is, when they say their chest feels constricted, and then they, and that charges them up and moves them into a panic. So I might just say, okay, and now feeling your breath and just allowing a full exhalation, maybe even with a little sound like, so you're taking them out of this high thoracic breathing into a more regulated breathing. And there are receptors in the intercostal muscles, as well as in the baroreceptors, so that when you're in that state, it actually just reinforces even more the hyperarousal, the sympathetic hyperarousal, which causes more, triggers more of this panting, which gives again more. And so you have to break the cycle, the positive feedback cycle with negative consequences.
As Peter explained, calming the physiological signs of panic can keep an attack at bay. And as we've just heard from both Peter and Stephen in this module, breathing techniques can be instrumental in managing anxiety. But what about when that doesn't work for a client? What if trying to control their breathing actually makes their anxiety worse? Well, here's one take on this from Dr. Joan Borisenko.
Here's what I found early on, Ruth. I used to run a clinic at actually two different Harvard Medical School teaching hospitals. And my population was maybe not the same as the general population, because I had a lot of people who were very ill, many of them terminally ill with AIDS and cancer. And so their breathing patterns were often pretty dysregulated, because it's a deep existential anxiety that so many people came with. And I found that, for example, the usual approach to teaching diaphragmatic breathing was really hard for a lot of people. And they kept thinking, oh, I'm not doing it right, I'm doing it wrong, my stomach is going down, it's supposed to be going up. And finally, at least for this population, I found that one of the easiest ways to deal with breathing was to completely change the perspective on it. And that was, instead of having to breathe in a certain way, whether there's so many ways, alternate nostril breathing, diaphragmatic breathing, pursed lip breathing, all of that, what I would simply say is the idea is simply to pay attention to your breath however it comes, just to really appreciate mindfully the sensations of breath coming in and breath going out, and simply having the permission to breathe however you breathe, and having the task being the observation of the breathing rather than the changing of the breathing, relieved number one, most people's anxiety about breathing wrong. And secondly, because they were relaxing into a self-regulatory kind of task, it also changed the quality of their breathing.
What Joan is saying here is that we don't necessarily need to change a client's breathing. Sometimes simply bringing attention to the breath can serve an equally important purpose. So next, let's look at three strategies that Dr. Kelly McGonigal suggests for when traditional breathing strategies don't work.
One thing I want to say is that my approach to breath work for anxiety is a little different. The research suggests if you try to get people to do the opposite, it can have this paradoxical effect of actually making things worse. So rather than thinking if the breathing pattern of anxiety and fear is rapid breathing or sort of more inhalation than exhalation, then I need to just quickly flip it, slow down the exhalation and slow down the whole breath all at once and get people to achieve relaxed breathing. My preference is actually to go to the idea of courage, which is the ability to have anxiety present and also choose what is valued or take action or find strength or find hope. So rather than erase the anxiety, bring something to it. And I like the idea of bringing the heart to it. So there are a couple of breathing techniques that I'll describe and some that we can do together. But I think what's a breathing technique that is expressive of courage and also helps cultivate courage? And one of my favorites is heart breathing. So I'm going to invite you now to imagine that you could actually breathe in and out of the center of your chest, almost as if you could relocate your nostrils down here and so like bypass the whole face and throat completely. And sometimes people get too caught up in the imagery of it, but it's just an idea. What if your nostrils were here, so there were a direct route into your lungs via the heart, which sits between the lungs? So that's the idea of it. And I won't, you know, if this were a real, like we were really doing this, I'd spend a lot of time setting us up for it with breath awareness. But the basic idea, we'll just skip all that, is to imagine breathing into the heart space and seeing if you can sense a quality of expansion in the chest when you breathe in. And we know in an anxiety, that's already present, which is great. We're using it, but we're transforming the meaning of it. And as you exhale, imagine breathing out of the heart space. So as you breathe in, imagine you could breathe into the center of your chest, feel the expansion around the heart and lungs, and allow that expansion to dissolve as you breathe out of the heart space. That's the breathing technique. That's a breathing technique that's been demonstrated to increase heart rate variability, which is that balance of sympathetic and parasympathetic activation. It's been shown to increase positive feelings of connection as well as courage. And I like to tell people that they can say to themselves, my heart is in it. So if they're feeling anxious, to remember that that anxiety can be a sign that you care. And as you breathe in and out of your heart, you can imagine the breath nourishing your heart and strengthening your heart so that you have the courage to do whatever is meaningful. So that's one technique. I also like a technique that uses a mudra of courage, and I will tell people what it means in most situations. So in yoga and in Buddhism, the gesture of courage is, it's often done only with the right hand. The other hand could be on the belly or on the earth, touching earth. But I like to do it with both hands because it's a simple gesture. And it's the gesture is the Abhaya mudra. It means I have no weapon. It's a gesture of sort of brave open-heartedness, where the heart is revealed, the back is strong, and there are no weapons. And the mudra vinyasa that I often teach is a gesture at the heart on the exhale, and then moving into the gesture of courage on the inhale. And once again, that gesture, if you're doing this, you'll sense there's a natural expansion of the heart that facilitates the in-breath, and the hands coming back to the heart, it just facilitates that gentle release of the out-breath, breathing in, to that gesture of courage, and breathing out, that gesture of maybe inner strength or peace. And the last breathing technique I wanted to mention is sounding. So you had mentioned there are lots of ways to extend the out-breath, and extending the out-breath is a really good way to balance the nervous system. But often the way it's taught when people are anxious is it's in this controlled, difficult way, like breathing through a straw, which is kind of tense. You can naturally extend the exhalation by making a sound. So there are different sounds that I work with, depending on the context. but the sound ah, the sound of humming with your mouth closed, and the ujjayi sound, which gently narrows the throat. So I don't know, will you do this with me? The first will be to take a deep breath in and make the sound ah, as if you were trying to send the sound outward, like you're singing basically. So it's not like ah, but we're gonna send that vowel sound out. And if we're being really technical, I like to pitch it around the heart. You know, there actually is a pitch for you, yourself, that will resonate more here than up here or here or here. And so I often encourage people to figure out what that pitch is. You'll hear what mine is. But let's just try this together. Inhaling through the nose. Actually having the sense that you can draw the navel to the spine, slow, controlled out-breath. And notice how much longer the out-breath was in the in-breath, and we weren't even trying to control that length. Another sound that's really nice is a humming sound. And again, you can even pitch the sound of humming at your heart. So I'll often have people bring their hands around their heart center to see if they can even feel the vibrations down here. Inhaling through the nose. And again, you can feel how the exhale naturally extends. But one of the great things we're doing with sounding is we're also countering that freeze response that tends to paralyze the vocal folds as well as the diaphragm. And then the last sound is the ujjayi sound, which is probably too complicated. I feel like I've taken enough time already, but I'll make the sound for you, inhaling. Open mouth ujjayi sound, and that's also been shown to help balance the nervous system, that particular sound. And it's so nice to hear it. I'll give you one last exercise in case anyone is interested. Do ujjayi and plug your ears while you're doing it, and it sounds like you're listening to the ocean. It'll sound like when you put a shell to your ear, you hear your own breath resonate inside you. It's a really interesting experience.
So just to recap some main points here. First, extending an exhalation can calm the physiological effects of anxiety. And second, there are many approaches that can help clients achieve that extended out-breath. In the next module, we're going to look at 4 core strategies that can change a client's relationship to anxiety. I'll see you there.